Firstly, I just want to pay tribute to the organisers for the extraordinary way that they framed this conference. And I know that one of the points made was that there weren't Palestinians here. And, you know, I can only say from having spoken to the organisers that they would have very much wanted, you know, as broad a range of people here as possible. What I'm not going to do, partly because I don't have the time, and also I'd be too intimidated to do it, is to rehearse, you know, that astonishingly rich array of papers to which we've been treated. You know, I think we can just all say that we probably all learned more about boycotts in 2 days than we thought was possible. But I was interested by a distinction that emerged in the conference between what I'm going to call the finite targeted boycott, for example, of slave-produced sugar, of the corporation marketing baby foods in a context where it's likely to increase infant mortality, of lettuce marketed by a corporation resisting union organization and the improvement of conditions of farm workers. That's one kind of boycott that we've been exploring at this conference. And there's another kind of boycott which is much more open-ended, in some ways, well, certainly much more total, and sometimes apparently infinite. Now, it seems to me that something like the Nestle boycott or the lettuce boycott in California, you know, exemplifies this finite targeted boycott. The boycott is going to end when Nestle alters its marketing policy. The lettuce boycott will end when the United Fruit Corporation begins to treat with the Farm Workers Union. But of course, we've also analyzed in this conference other kinds of boycotts. And there were certain boycotts that were studied that were really on, you know, the other end of the spectrum entirely. These were boycotts that wouldn't end. So, for example, if we looked at the anti-Semitic boycott of Jewish business in Galicia and elsewhere in Eastern Europe in the early 20th century, if we looked at the Nazi boycott of Jewish stores, these were boycotts that couldn't end by the targets of the boycotts altering policy. Those driving forward those boycotts would only be satisfied once those being boycotted really no longer existed. You know, those are kind of infinite, total boycotts. Boycotts that are really very, very different from the kind of targeted boycotts that I was referring to earlier, you know, on the basis of the work that has been provided. And indeed, if one looked at the nationalist boycotts that were referred to by some of these speakers, for example, German nationalists and Polish nationalists determined to buy only from Germans or Poles, or Czechs determined to boycott German commercial concerns, they don't stipulate an end point to their boycotts. They're going to continue boycotting these groupings in perpetuity. And, you know, the same might be said of the implicit boycott of Jewish nationalists in British Mandate Palestine. You know, they insisted that only Jewish products should be bought, and they were calling for an implicit boycott of the products of others in perpetuity. Now, I just want to point to the fact that has emerged from this conference that it does appear as if the nationalist boycott, the boycott associated with nationalist movements, I'm not saying it always does, but that certainly in many of the cases, in fact in most of the cases to which we've referred in this boycott, it did have a tendency to the, what I'm calling the infinite, the unending, the perpetual exclusion of those construed as, you know, the competing nation, the competitor nationalist, the enemy. And I think that that's one of the questions that this conference raises for the boycott movement that is shadowing this conference, because I think it means that even those who strongly support the BDS movement, I think, and who have attended this conference, would do well just to explore fully its relationship to nationalism as a phenomenon. Because I know that it's it has been argued that it's linked to the global justice movement, and I'm not saying that it's not, but it is also linked to Palestinian nationalism. And you know, I'm not in any way saying that the oppressions of Palestinians mustn't be addressed, but I am also saying that one of the lessons of this conference is that boycotts that are associated with nationalism in some way or other just do need to look at themselves and look at the degree to which they might be at times given to certain impulses that are total, that are unending, and to which, and that are negative, to which I'd referred. And I'm not saying that this is the case in this particular instance, but I'm saying that the history that we've been dealing with means that we need to look carefully at what a boycott related to nationalism can mean. Now, another point that I think has really emerged very, very strongly in this conference, and I think that has been proved by the papers relating to the BDS movement, is that it is fundamentally a movement in civil society and in international civil society. It's a social movement. And I think something that has not really been dealt with, I think, adequately at this conference, and I don't think the conference could deal with everything, is the broad historical field of force, if you like, that means really this issue is not going to go away. And I think that one of the unique features of the Israel-Palestine tragedy is that it saw, in the context of, you know, phenomenal persecution and European anti-Semitism, it saw the rise, the consolidation, and the extension of a settler state in the post-World War II period. So that's to say, at the very moment that the historic process of decolonization began, the rise of Israel, in many respects, ran counter to that process. Now, it's quite true that the rise of Israel is, and the establishment of Israel is, unthinkable without European anti-Semitism. And the process of Jewish settlement of Palestine was absolutely driven forward by persecutions in many places. And it was not part of imperialism in the way in which the building of settler states elsewhere was. For example, in the country that I come from, Zimbabwe, you know, it's obvious that the Southern Rhodesian settler state was fundamentally linked to imperialism in a way that the Israeli settler state, if you would, if one can call it that, was not. In many ways, of course, the establishment of the Israeli state was a struggle against imperialism and against British imperialism and, of course, against Arab nationalism. But the world in which Israel was born was a world in which colonization and settler displacement of original populations was construed as one of the great moral problems of the 20th century, you know, as great as the moral problem of racism. And Israel simply cannot escape that fact. For example, Asian or African peoples emerging from imperial or settler control are simply bound to see correspondences between their struggle and the struggle of the Palestinians. You know, a colossal, epochal shift against the settler state took place at the very time that Israel established itself, and it continued to take place as guerrilla wars in southern Africa showed. And I think that that was going to, as it were, mean that the establishment of Israel became a moral question for many people. And that question was going to be compounded by what happened after 1967, the occupation and then the increasing colonization of the occupied areas. So those who attempt to reduce the boycott campaign to anti-Semitism, and while I'm not denying that there may be some anti-Semites who hide their bigotry, you know, in anti-Israel statements and sentiments, are simply nevertheless not going to be able to escape the fact that the problematization, if I can call it that, of the Israel-Palestine question really expresses something which is so fundamental to international civil society. You know, what the settler state means, or the rise of the settler state means, what decolonization means, that it's simply not going to go away. You know, there's just a vast tide of history, colonial, nationalist struggles, anti-imperial campaigns, decolonization. It's just made international civil society peculiarly sensitive to issues of dispossession and displacement by settlers. And I think that recognition of that moral historical fact is really sorely needed by those who simply condemn the boycott campaign. Now, if I'd argue that that moral historical question has to be raised with respect to those who oppose the boycott movement, I also do think that the boycott movement also has moral historical questions that it should raise. Now, some of them are kind of obvious. This campaign has to be sensitive to the fact that Jewish people were themselves subjected earlier to anti-Semitic boycott campaigns, but that's a very obvious point. The more complex, I think, moral historical question that the boycott movement has to address, and which I don't think has really been addressed at this conference, is at which point would the boycott be called off? Would it be called off? You know, this is why I think the distinction that I made, and I'm just into my last few minutes, David, so don't worry, that the distinction that I made and that has emerged at this conference between the specific and targeted boycott, which you know will end once slaves are no longer producing sugar, once union rights are being given to particular workers, why that's different to the other kind of boycott that is not announcing quite specifically when it would end. So I want to propose this. Let us say that a kind of left government came to power in Israel, that despite the resistance of settlers on the West Bank, it determined to withdraw to the 1967 borders, that it also determined to begin to act systematically against those elements of discrimination around the land, for example, that have been spoken about, that affect Palestinians within Israel, that it also made some kind of very meaningful, well, began to engage in policies that showed that moral responsibility was being taken for the original displacement of 1948 and the descendants of those people, but yet nevertheless was wanting to retain itself, to retain its identity as the Israeli nation state, as an Israeli nation state. At that point, does the boycott get called off, or does it not? Now, if one says that no, that the boycott does not get called off at that point, then in effect, what one is saying is that the boycott has to continue until the Israeli nation state is dismantled. And in a utopian world, it may well be that one would want a state of complete equality and complete freedom of movement, and it would be something extremely desirable. But if it is evident that the identity of Israelis is bound up with the existence of the Israeli nation state, that if after the major changes in policy that I've delineated were made, that state is still held to be illegitimate. What does that imply? And I think that this is where the boycotters have, if not evaded the question, I think that they've not signaled sufficiently what their point of view on it is. Because I think in a non-utopian world, which is unfortunately the one that we live in, and in the foreseeable future, it's quite obvious that the dismantling of that state would require an immense amount of violence. It's probably going to compound an existing historical tragedy. And the question that it raises, I think, is at which point or which historical processes do we consider are morally appropriate to seek to reverse? And I do think that the boycott movement so far has not answered that question. And I think it's the failure to answer that question which I think is weakening the Israeli left. It's not enabling the kind of space to exist ideologically in Israel which would allow people to say to their fellow Israelis, look, there are a huge number of morally questionable issues relating to our policies and to our state that we've got to address, or the outside world is clearly saying this to us. We've got to do that. And they simply cannot say that because at the moment, the boycott movement has not sufficiently declared what its position is with regard to the Israeli nation state. And I think that moral historical question, the failure to answer that moral historical question is also what allows some people to simply dismiss the boycott movement as anti-Semitism. Because there are people in the world, and some of them are in positions of power in their state, as we've known, who have at various points called for something such as the destruction of Israel. And it seems to me that for space to be created within the Israeli and Palestinian communities, we really have to address that fact. So I'm going to close on that question, on that point.